At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
Welcome back to another episode of Seven Deadly Sinners. As always, thank you guys so much for listening, and we are still calling for listener stories. I've received a few, and one theme I got inspired by from one of the listener stories I've read so far is about getting messages from the beyond, from loved ones who have passed, and I thought it was such a beautiful story. I don't want to give it away because I'm looking forward to reading it on the next listener stories episode. Thank you, Esther. But it gave me a new topic to ask y'all for. Any heartwarming or comforting or even scary, if that's what happened, stories where you felt the presence or were given a sign from someone from the beyond. And both Greg and I actually have good ones we'll be sharing as well. But along with that, the floodgates are still wide open. Cult stories, near misses, gut feelings about creepers who ended up being an actual creep you saw in the news, or gut feelings you knew to get yourself out of the situation. Cryptids, ghosts, creepy highway stories, you name it. And on that note, creepy highway stories is sort of the theme of this episode. And I will be joined by the one and only Greg Hunter, who has a highway disaster story. Some maybe possible haunted lore of the Mojave Desert that he's waiting to tell me for this episode.
I've been holding out. I never told you the whole story.
Dang, I want to know so bad.
Yep. Well, yeah, I mean, oof. Traffic jams.
Yeah. So
I don't know how creepy they are, but they get creepier as they get more horrifying and more stressful and excruciating.
Yeah, I can see that. You're his story. I'm going to tell this first one, and which is not from personal experience, but it does kind of connect in a weird way. And then Greg has got the floor because there's a lot I don't know that, you know, happened fairly recently. So before Greg goes into it, and these stories will sort of tie together because they both involve a semi-truck that crashed carrying hazardous materials and a very insane aftermath that you personally can attest to.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you for being here. Do you want to hear this I-94 crash in Michigan first?
I do. I mean, it's kind of a little bit like might send me into some post-traumatic stress as my dilemma was only a week ago.
Oh, yeah. It was like, well, a little over a week. Yeah, you're right.
Slept in the Mojave.
Okay. I have this line written where I was going to say to everyone, I promise this won't become a car crash podcast, but between my accident, the Le Mans episode, and now this, I can see how you might be thinking that, guys.
I kind of think a car crash podcast is a cool concept.
Well, sure, but I this just seems to be a theme that's popping up in our lives. But trigger warning for this first one and for really all of them, because I can't even imagine what it would be like to lose a loved one in a crash. So if this is too sensitive for you, I encourage you to take care of yourself and maybe sit this one out if it's too difficult, because crashes are extremely traumatizing. So love you guys. Thank you. Let's get into it. Sources for this episode are the Detroit Free Press, Wikipedia, MLive.com, and the others will be in the show notes. So on January 9th, 2015, a tractor trailer collided with another truck. This led to a historic 193 vehicle pileup. The event occurred in a Michigan town called Climax, which is about 26 kilometers east of Kalamazoo. I should have done that in miles, but that was a bit of a copy and paste. I don't know Michigan that well.
I thought you just preferred kilometers.
I did. You'll see in a second when it comes to the winds. I did like go on and convert that from miles per hour to kilometers because I was like, I don't have a gauge for.
Kilometers are a bit creepier.
Yeah, they sound scarier because they're.
Let's face the facts. It's the Olympics. You're all on kilometers and meters because we've been watching the Olympics.
So I should have left it like that. The 2015 pileup started with a call about a simple crash. The initial collision in the eastbound lanes caused drivers on the opposite side heading west to get distracted, and they began crashing. The size of the pileup on both the east and westbound lanes was unprecedented. Fire Lieutenant Mark Koch said he thought it was just another accident, but he and his crew were in for an unbelievable scene. Imagine going to respond to a routine crash as what was reported around 9:20 a.m. that morning and showing up and seeing pure destruction. Lieutenant Koch said, quote, "We were in the westbound lanes and we saw this wall of cars. They were everywhere. They were in the median and on the right side and on the left side. And they were up on cable barriers and they were up on semis and underneath semis. There wasn't a spot where there wasn't a car or a truck." Can you imagine, Greg?
Wow. I think like the hardest thing to maybe process as a first responder is that like you were showing up for a wreck in the eastbound lanes, you know? And so it's like this is like a domino effect of rubbernecking, you know, can't help yourself but watch the train wreck unfold type of thing where like cars, you know, the other wreck started from people looking at the other accident. I think that's one interesting thing about all of these horrifying traffic jam tales is that it's a domino effect. Like one wreck causes another from people either looking at it or they get so antsy that they start making bad decisions while waiting in line. And that's true of my story too, but we'll get to that. But
yeah, that's good call. Yeah, it's a domino effect.
How shocking. You're the fire department. You're coming up the westbound lanes because you're thinking you got to get over to the wreck in the eastbound and that's going to be all blocked up. But instead, you're met with an even worse scenario than what was reported. I'd say that's every first responder's kind of nightmare.
Yeah, I would imagine. And we're going to get into the video in a bit, which Greg saw. And I was not surprised as to how shocked you were, but you're just a little bit like kind of tougher than me. Like I only got through like maybe the first like 15 seconds of it before I was like, I think I'm going to wait and watch this with Greg. Because I, by the end of it, I had gotten chills, but we'll get to that.
Well, we're talking about it now.
Well, yeah.
The video is, I mean, if you like watching train wrecks, this is like the worst traffic video I've ever seen. I'd heard about this incident. I didn't know there was any footage. And it's just like, kind of like you can't turn away and nothing can stop it. And they're just sliding on ice, or it's the weather is so bad, like the cars can't see the pileup. It's like around a corner. It doesn't really make sense. It's just like car after car after car just smashing into each other at high speeds, like seemingly no braking.
Yeah. So as if that car crash wasn't terrifying enough, with the size of the pileup of vehicles being unparalleled, frankly extraordinary, the cold was also blistering. Temperatures were in the teens and eventually single digits. It was a wintry nightmare, and like we described in that video. On the I-94, the wind was roaring, close to 30 mile per hour steady winds with gusts up to 45 miles per hour, blowing snow all over the highway and creating a complete whiteout. So drivers, presumably, like you described, didn't even know their fate until they were right upon it, going at high speeds, and they couldn't even see that there was a semi-truck in front of them crashed, you know? But it gets worse. A fire ignited and spread to a semi-truck carrying 40,000 pounds of commercial-grade fireworks, as well as another tanker loaded with 44,600 pounds of liquid formic acid. And I probably should have looked up what formic acid is or does, but it sounds scary.
Sounds terrible. Sounds like that's how the Joker got his face wounds.
It doesn't sound good. Put it that way.
It sounds like a terrorist attack type of combination, fireworks and acid.
Should we be putting these things on trains instead? Because those are less likely to crash, aren't they? I don't know. It just seems like really scary stuff and similar to
yours. Well, they gotta be transported some way, you know?
I don't know. What's the option? It seems like, wow, what are the odds that on this, you know, because the crash snaked about, let's see, I think 3/4 mile on one side and 1/4 mile on the other side or whatever. What are the odds that there's two trucks at the same time in the same place in the same wintry conditions carrying really
hazardous materials? I think it's probably way more common than you realize.
Well, I feel like we need a better system.
I don't know if there is a way to implement a better system. I think the American highway system is something that's kind of like relatively respected as far as like logistics go of transporting a bunch of stuff. But what blows my mind is, what was a truck loaded down with fireworks doing in the middle of winter? We're nowhere near 4th of July.
My mind just exploded.
What? Like the truck full of fireworks.
What? Yeah, what?
Kaboom.
Maybe there was like an Olympic event. Olympics or
Winter Olympics as it was on its way, maybe.
2015, let's Unlikely, do the math on
but
that.
That's a good point. Maybe it was for like some sort of like celebratory event.
Yeah.
You know, a concert or something. But that's still a lot of fireworks. Also, the whole fireworks, like
40,000 pounds.
That's what 40,000. I mean, that is a.
What does one firework weigh?
Not a lot. A
couple ounces?
Yeah, I mean, depending on the type, whether it's a bottle rocket or a firecracker. But I mean, like, that's crazy.
I'm mad you didn't tell me that beforehand, because now all I want to do is Google where were those fireworks going.
And where'd they come from? The firework industry in general is something that really blows my mind, because fireworks don't exist throughout 11 months of the year. And then all of a sudden in June, boom, there are firework markets everywhere in every grocery store parking lot.
Yeah, roadside.
Every roadside corner, strip mall. Suddenly they got firework stands sold by the shadiest of rednecks.
Well, it's kind of like the Halloween things that pop up, those like superstores.
I think the people who do fireworks stands also do Halloween stores. It's like a, you know.
They can do a quick whip stitch and grifting, put a costume together.
You know, generations of grifting get you into that. But like, it's also like, I swear every state says fireworks are basically illegal.
That's true.
And then it's like, and you go into some of these fireworks stands and they're literally sold as like, totally illegal. Bombs, artillery shells, we got them. And they're just like chugging beers, selling cash only explosives. And how it's just like this thing that America,
listen, it's the
during the
life.
Month of June, we just turned a blind eye.
Just let them live. They're living a transient sort of. It's almost like they're like carnies. Just let them live.
That's what happened. The carnies became the fireworks stand and Halloween costume.
Well, yeah, there's different seasons. Maybe they still carny after 4th of July. Then they carny. And then wintertime, they go into some firework. They hit the Halloween market. And then, yeah, maybe there's a big NFL
vacation
game.
Maybe in Florida.
Yeah, it's almost like crab fishing. Like, maybe I grew up with a lot of crab fishers. Fishermen, they go crab fishing for a couple months out of the year. They make, you know, like basically 30 grand, 40 grand or whatever. And I'm from a small town where it didn't cost that much to live there. And then the rest of the year, they just hang.
Pretty awesome. I'm thinking we should maybe look into this from a career standpoint.
Maybe we could.
Podcasting and fireworks.
I like it. Okay, moving on. So the fireworks went off, and first responders came in from afar, and they thought that it was a black cloud. It was a storm cloud, until they realized what they approached was an enormous fire. As the fireworks went off, drivers and passengers had to dive for cover.
Oh, my God.
An unbelievable... That sounds like a war zone.
It is a war zone. These are explosives flying at you.
And there's little kids in these videos, which I'll explain. And unbelievably, like we said earlier, some of this was caught on a nearby driver's cell phone camera. We'll post the video to our Instagram at 7 Deadly Sinners Podcast, but we're going to also play a short snippet now. It's chilling. And again, it's more of a visual thing to see, but hearing some of the audio can just show you how quickly car after car, semi after semi just began crashing into each other. And the whiteout appeared so bad that it seems the drivers didn't even see the pileup before it was too late. So at high speeds, they're crashing into each other or driving off the road just to avoid it last minute.
Yeah.
Which the first guy in that clip, I will say, or girl, I don't know who it was, I thought that was a kind of a smart move. I mean, maybe he or she saw it beforehand, but they chose to just drive themselves into the snow, not just like either break or whatever. They just sort of kind of gently got up, but I think that was the only one. I mean, and this video doesn't capture every single 193 vehicles, because eventually the person taking the video is like, we need to go help people.
Yeah.
So here's a clip.
Oh no. Oh, watch out, watch out, watch out. I hear that guy.
Lord. Lord. Oh, look at this truck coming right in. Can't do anything. He can't do anything.
An officer with the Michigan State Police said what amazes me is that only one person was killed, which is still so sad, and I hope that man rests in peace and his loved ones are okay. He was a truck driver from Canada in his 50s, and it's still so tragic. It is shocking that only one person, you know, passed away, but
from the carnage of cars.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It seems like a miracle that only one person died.
Still one person too many, but absolutely. When you watch that footage and you hear like kids screaming and the crash after crash, it's like, how?
How many cars was it?
193.
193 cars. I mean, like that is a little bit miraculous, because I mean, like, there's three car pileups with multiple deaths. You know, like that is 193 people involved in that type of.
And the amount of them that were semi-trucks, I want to say like maybe like a third of them were.
Yeah.
It's
powerful, just steel.
It's crazy.
Missiles.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Sorry to interrupt you. It's crazy to see, I just was visualizing on that, seeing the like a car come in, crash into a semi, but all of a sudden when you're like, oh my God, there's a semi coming and it's starting to slide, like, and there's already a car who's crashed into the semi in front of it. Like it is... apocalyptic.
Absolutely. It's like Speed with Keanu Reeves and Sandra Bullock. It's just like there is a speeding, you know, 10-ton steel missile, motorized. That's what a semi is when it's just not stopping and piling into a bunch of other cars. I mean,
yeah. So the result of this, they said, unfortunately, the cause of the accident was negligence. Though the weather was far from ideal, drivers had been going too fast for the conditions. And a total of 63 people received tickets for driving improperly in the wintry circumstances. But who among us hasn't received one of those? All right?
Yeah, that's kind of hard. I mean, I understand the state's got to, like, hold some level of authority and accountability for what happened. But that, I mean, isn't being involved in that horrible accident, you know, your car being smashed and you having to spend, who knows, a crazy amount of time out in those winter conditions enough.
Yeah. It's true. Like, yeah, exactly. Like, what are you going to call them on it? Like, and how do you know how fast they were going? Like, you weren't clocking it. You can't even tell from that video how fast they were going.
It seems like, in my personal opinion, if the, like, you don't blame somebody for getting caught in a tornado.
Yeah.
Like, it's a little bit out of their control. Like, even if they were driving too fast, the road conditions that no one, they weren't expecting it, I get it. You know, like, maybe the.
And the whiteout could have come on suddenly, similar to my hailstorm. And I got that guy gave me a ticket, even though I was not going over the speed limit. It came on suddenly. I didn't know what to do, but yeah, slap me with a ticket, dude.
It's really making me want to go to for the first time ever, like an online law school, Abraham Lincoln University or something, and get my degree and become one of those late night, almost telemarketer.
You call
firms.
Me before it's
you
too late.
You call me the strong arm.
Yeah.
I'm going to get you what you deserve. You know? Because it's just like, I kind of want to fight back against these ridiculous traffic claims. But we'll see if I do it.
Yeah. Because it's such a level of added stress. Like, when I had to, like, get the police report to, and I was, like, hoping he didn't write the ticket. He said I should have been going 20 miles an hour. The hailstorm came on suddenly. I was going, I don't know, under the speed limit, which was 55.
You shouldn't have been in your car.
Yeah, exactly.
You shouldn't have been going anywhere that day.
Under the speed limit.
You should have had ESP and know that this storm was going to form. Why didn't you get your meteorology degree from school?
Yeah, exactly.
Check the radar.
But the added stress already of like healing from a broken back and then being like, okay, I got to get I got to get all the insurance approved because I totaled the truck, and then just being like, oh, shoot, is him giving me a ticket going to make them not like, I didn't need that shit.
you didn't need the extra stress. But what I do hope is that that officer is now a listener of our podcast, considering he spent hours in the emergency room talking to you about it before he decided to issue you a ticket. So, officer...
Don't say his name.
Friendly man who writes tickets to people in emergency rooms, I hope you're listening.
Yeah, anyways. Well, so it just goes to show you that these things happen. So be safe out there. And yeah, maybe we should have better regulation and safety practices for semis carrying 40,000 plus pounds of hazardous material. But this is where Greg's going to come in because...
I just thought of something. Before my story, you know, you're talking about how can we make the conditions better. You know, I wonder, is it... We have airbags on the inside. But why don't we have airbags on the outside? Like bumper cars, like, you know.
They would deploy once it was hit, or you're just saying that cars should have a...
Yes, deploy once it's hit. Like, I understand we have airbags on the inside. They deploy once you're hit. That's good. But what if we had airbags on the outside that also deployed?
Could that just bounce around, though?
I don't know. Maybe it would just help the impact of other cars. Maybe it's a far-fetched idea, but I just thought of it. It made me think of, like... bumper bowling. What do they call it when they put the things out on bowling?
Oh, yeah. I know what you're saying.
Bumper cars. Like,
yeah, but that would make, like I'm saying, it might make them bounce off. I don't know. Listen, I'm not a scientist. That's another career you need to find late at night.
I got a lot of careers I got to get into.
Well, now you need to get to your story. So we're going to take a quick left turn, at least climate-wise.
Oh, there's no turns. We're stuck on the road.
We're stuck on the road, but I'm saying turn. At least climate-wise, because it's an extreme shift in climate.
Well, that's true.
And we're going to hear Greg's enduring story of the Mojave Desert from just over a week ago.
The I-40 nightmare. All right, so as you may know, because I mentioned it during the Le Mans episode where we interviewed Valerie Versoux from France, from Paris, where the Olympics are going on. This is completely irrelevant. I was in LA for a number of weeks and couldn't wait to get back home to my beautiful wife and my father, who is in need of some medical nursing assistance. So it felt like kind of a urgent trip home. Like, I couldn't wait one more day. I had people who wanted to see me in L.A., and I wanted to see them, but I just had to get back to the ranch. So I'm racing towards Colorado, into the eastern sun, and I see in the GPS, like, okay, there's a pileup on I-40. You know, it's got the red lines, so I'm like, oh, this is going to kind of suck. But it's like, the GPS is telling me that it was only 2 hours... of a hold up. And then, you know, I'm Googling and I see that, oh man, like I-15 through the Mojave, it's, you know, the highway you take from California to Las Vegas if you're going to Vegas. And it's closed because a semi truck carrying lithium ion batteries wrecked and burst into flames. And I don't know if you guys know this, but this is something that I wanted to touch on and was telling Rachel about, that like electric cars are great, especially when you charge them at your home using power that was generated from coal. It's kind of a funny loophole where like we're not really saving the environment.
They're generated from coal?
Well, yeah, when you plug stuff in, like the power we're getting, well, my music studio is solar powered, but down at the house where we have grid power, that power is generated from a combination of coal and hydro power plants here in Colorado.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So when they're charging their batteries at their house that's being powered by non-battery power, like, I get it.
It's just kind of funny. It's like, you know, you're not really saving the world. You're actually just mining more lithium. But that's besides the point.
It's like celebrities that are part of the Sierra Club and whatever, and they fly around on private jets and drive Hummers, Range Rovers, things like that. You know,
I don't know if it's to that level. I mean, maybe it helps the environment a little bit. I don't want to really get too far into this discussion. But what I do want to say is that batteries are bombs. All right? A battery-powered car, if it catches fire, it's going to explode
repeatedly.
Really?
For a good long while, and you can't really predict it when the explosions are going to happen. And if you're curious about it, just Google like lithium battery explosion or battery powered car on fire. You know, there's plenty of videos that show like the much more dangerous results of wrecks with battery powered cars.
I have so many questions. So, because I've always wondered too, like how a regular car even like catches fire or explodes or whatever. So you're saying it's far more dangerous and more common maybe for a lithium battery powered car to do that than just a regular car? Is it like if you get, okay, this is the only example I can think of in my head. They used to put the engines, I think in VW bugs or something, maybe in Porsches too, in the back of the...
In the trunk.
So when they got... Sometimes when people got rear-ended, it was extremely dangerous because...
Yeah. Explosion.
Know, yeah.
Here's the main difference. And there's a lot... Yeah, I'm sure there's a bunch of science, and I'm not going to get scientific. I'm just going to say that when you get in a wreck in a gasoline-powered vehicle, there's just one explosion.
Mm-hmm.
Presumably. Or none, hopefully. No explosion. You know, gasoline is not like... something that definitely is going to explode on impact. It has a lot of factors, and neither are batteries. And obviously, you have a battery in all your cars, but they're probably lead acid batteries, and it's just one battery. In these battery-powered cars, there's hundreds of batteries, little ones. The point is that like, if you watch a electric car on fire, like it's just a lot more volatile and a lot longer of explosions. And so I think that's half the reason that this semi that was on fire, it took so long to clean up because they had to wait for it to just burn out. There's no way for them to get in there and like put out the fire correctly.
Did it catch the surrounding area on fire?
I don't know.
Okay.
And there's very little information online about what really happened.
Shady, it's cover up.
It does seem shady.
I'm joking.
There's some shady things that I saw. That's the thing that like I haven't even expressed to you yet, and I have video of it. So it's like, you know, I don't know if it's old Mayor Pete Buttigieg and the government plotting, or maybe the semi-truck driver union alliance.
And now we've become a conspiracy theory podcast.
All right, I love conspiracy theories. There's probably no conspiracy at all. It was just Californians on the road.
In the 115, 120 degree heat. Luke, he's been on our podcast, Kristen as well, her boyfriend, Greg's best friend or whatever. He drives when he goes back and forth from Colorado to California. His car's got some miles on it, which is good for him.
Oh yeah, he's made it to 300,000, yeah, or at least he was really close. He was at like 299.
Yeah,
we were having a mileage off with. I've got a 2007 Prius. He's got like a 2007 Kia.
You were in the running until yours got struck by lightning.
I was in the lead. I was at 277,000 miles,
and then I watched it get struck by lightning.
And then it got struck by lightning, and the Prius is just Toyota. Reach out.
You were in California when that happened too, weren't you? Yeah, you were.
I was.
Anyways, meaning I was alone on the ranch with his Prius. He had driven our truck to California, whatever. And I was like looking out the window and I watched it get struck by lightning. I was like, well, now I don't have a car to drive. So,
yeah, I don't know if that's a sign or just an opportunity for Toyota to do some research. So get at me, Toyota.
Yeah. Anyways,
the two climate extremes. I mean, that's the, you know, best case scenario. If you're in a traffic jam, there's a cool breeze. It's 65 degrees. You got snacks in the car, water. But that's not always the case. And in this Michigan story you're talking about, like the extreme cold, like that, the problems only get worse once you get stranded and the weather's bad.
Yeah.
And so
you can run out of gas. You can. People die all the time, like not being prepared to go like hiking in the Mojave Desert or Joshua Tree, which is part of the Mojave, right? Is Joshua Tree part of the Mojave?
It's not in the Mojave Preserve, but the Mojave Desert is kind of like,
yeah,
you know, where does the sand change?
Yeah, but this happens all the time where people get, and I'm talking about hiking, but you got to think about it. When you're stuck in a traffic jam, you might want to get out of the car. You might have a dog you need to take for a walk or whatever. You weren't prepared with a case of water. Well, you were, but
I was.
But people get disoriented.
And if there's one thing I can say after this podcast that you guys go and do, like, be prepared. Stash a couple waters for no reason in your car.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a couple Cliff bars. You know, something to get you through. You won't be upset that it's there if you ever need it. So lucky for me, I'm not like, oh, just a total prepper, you know, always prepared for the end of the world type of guy. But in this scenario, I lucked out because I was on set the day before I left and I was producing this project. So lucky for me, it kind of fell on my hands to be like, I got to make all this crafty disappear. So I had a case of water in my truck. I had, you know, fruits and vegetables and nuts and trail mix and granola bars for days. I could have been stranded out in the desert for a week and I would have been all right. But everybody else, I'm sure, wasn't planning on a, you know, multi-day dilemma when they left their house that morning. I certainly wasn't. And my GPS didn't tell me that's what I was going to encounter. So as I'm approaching Barstow, it said that the traffic jam was basically like going to add 2 extra hours to my trip. So I wasn't too worried, but lucky for me as well, I pulled over and I fueled up and I got some food because I was like, I don't want to be stuck in traffic hungry. So I ate some Raising Cane's, great chicken. Thank you, Raising Cane's, and proceeded to just, you know, bite the bullet and go get stuck in traffic because there was no other way around really without like getting into the kind of extremes. So I make the turn on to I-40 and I'm preparing to settle in to what I think is going to be a slow 2-hour jaunt through the Mojave Desert. And I'm flying for like 10 miles and then I start to see the cars piling up and I'm like, okay, well, you know, I knew it was coming. No big deal. I call Rachel and my dad and tell them like, I'm going to be late. I think I can still make it home tonight, but it's going to be 2 a.m., you know, according to my GPS. But I'm planning on just powering through. And I'm sitting there, and I'm sitting there, and cars are piling up behind me. And I can see to the south, there is old Route 66, the National Trails Highway, you know, the frontage road that's pretty much drives right alongside I-40. And cars are just flying on it, and I'm jealous. I'm like, man, I knew this was coming. I should have taken that. And I'm contemplating, like, you know, as I'm sitting there just stopped, you know, moving maybe 30 feet every 5 to 10 minutes. And I'm seeing other cars, you know, making a break for it, driving through the median and going over to the westbound lane so they can go back to the last exit and get on old Route 66. And I'm like, man, you know, maybe I should try this. But I'm like, whatever, you know, I'm thinking about it and I'm like, that road's going to end at like a stop sign in a little town. And there's hundreds of cars driving that way. It's like, that's going to get piled up worse than this. And I'm trying to pull it up on my GPS, but I soon get into the thick of it. And I'm realizing that, like, I'm gridlocked, and now there's so many people stuck here trying to pull off of one cell tower that my GPS won't work anymore. So I can't get an actual reading on, like, what's going on over there on that Route 66. And I can't pull up any maps. You know, it just turns into that infinite grid, you know, when it won't propagate. So my GPS won't propagate. I don't know how long this is going to last, and I can tell that this certainly is going to be longer than 2 hours. Hell, it's been 2 hours at this point. I'm getting a little antsy, getting a little frantic. I can still make calls. So I call Rachel and my dad and let them know, like, there's no way I'm making it home tonight. I don't know when this is going to end. I don't know what's going on. But nevertheless, you know, I got a full tank of gas. Well, maybe now it's at 3/4 and I'm blasting AC and it's 112 degrees outside. And I'm making just a little bit of progress. You know, maybe we've gone 5 miles now. And I start to see people stuck. They've either pulled off the road because they're just done with it and they want to stop, you know, worrying about having to move every 5 or 10 minutes. They just want to relax. Maybe they ran out of gas. Maybe they're preserving gas. But I'm starting to see cars just pulled over. And I'm like, man, you know, I don't think this is ever going to break. So I decide to do you know, the dumb, crazy move, and I drive through the median, and I go on the westbound lane to go back to the last exit, and I get on old Route 66. And oh, I'm flying now. Windows down, blasting the music, rocking out, feeling like I am a bat out of hell, just a wild man. I beat the man, beat the system. This is great. I'm just cruising on Route 66. I probably make it 5 miles. The happiness lasted maybe 5 minutes, and then bam, I catch up with all the other people who had this great idea. And sure enough, my instincts were right. This road ends at a four-way stop in some little godforsaken town that hasn't seen this many cars since the Model T was invented. And I'm just stuck sitting there in 112 degree heat. I'm losing gas. It's been 4 hours now. I'm beyond frustrated anymore. I've kind of accepted it. And I'm starting to contemplate whether or not this is going to turn into a real emergency level situation. And then you kind of feel the anxiety and the paranoia prevail throughout the entire traffic jam. And the only information we can get, because the cell towers are overloaded, is like a game of telephone of people screaming at, you know, the car behind him or the car in front of him, like, what's going on? What can you see? You know, bad information. And then people start slowly deteriorating into madness. There's definitely people out there who are running out of gas, hungry, thirsty, scared, confused, and they start making rash decisions.
And you have to think too, there's probably people that have little babies, little dogs, elderly people that are just like, don't have the stamina to be dealing with this scenario.
I saw them, I'll get there. I saw some old people, you know, get taken away on ambulances. How they even, the ambulances got there, I don't know. But as the paranoia builds, people start to make very irrational, bad decisions. Like just straight up driving on the wrong side of the road, right? There's no law at this point in time. There's only, you know, the brief hint of people's survival skills kicking in. They're thinking like, I gotta make a move. I'm gonna run out of gas. I'm too thirsty to wait any longer. Their impatience just builds and makes them finally make illegal and irrational decisions, and they're driving on the wrong side of the road. And I see it just happening beside me, and then cars are coming the other way that had turned around because they realize they're stuck, and now boom, there's another collision. And boom, there's another collision. And I'm seeing people throw their cars off the side of the road so they don't hit the oncoming traffic because they're driving on the wrong side of the road. And then I see people just thinking that they can drive off road in Kia Sorentos and Honda Civics, and they're getting stuck in the sand. And it's just like this mass chaos. And then I start to see people cutting the fences between I-40 and Route 66 so they can get over to Route 66, only realize they're more stuck there. And then so now people are cutting the fences that are stuck on Route 66 to get back on I-40. And I become one of those people. I see like a Jeep Grand Cherokee go down. There's a point where Route 66 goes over an overpass and goes to the other side, to the north side of I-40. It's not an entrance ramp. You can't get back on there. It's just an overpass. And people cut the fence and they're driving down to get back on I-40. And I'm like, all right, this is my chance. I got to take it. And so I luckily I'm in our four-wheel drive truck, and it was like a breeze for me. This is basically like just driving on the ranch. I drive down a 60-foot cliffside embankment to get back on I-40. Boo. I make
Sorry,
it.
What? You drove down a 60-foot cliff?
I mean, it's like a cliff. I mean, it was like man-made. You know how, you know, if you can imagine an overpass goes over the highway, like it's kind of got cliff sides on each side, right?
Like the LA River area thingy?
I mean, this is like just straight up Mojave dirt and sand. It's not like it's concrete, but yeah, in a way.
Okay.
And there were cars in front of me that had made it safely that were less capable of you know, making that drive than our GMC Sierra Elevation. Go GMC, love you.
That wasn't an ad, guys.
I'm placing a lot of ads in this podcast. Anyhow, I get back on I-40 and there's a big sigh of relief. I'm like, okay, like this is gonna move, right? This is two lanes. This is a national interstate. Like they're gonna take care of it. They're gonna get helicopters, the National Guard, somebody out here. It's gonna happen. It's gonna move. But I can believe that this Route 66 two lane highway with people driving on the wrong side of it, causing more wrecks, causing more gridlock. It's just a bad scenario, and I need to get out of it.
And it's about this time that Greg leaves me this sort of frantic voicemail, which just made me very frantic and worried for him.
Well, this is getting really bad. I mean, people are just driving on both sides of the road, cutting people off, trying to get ahead to get out of this situation. Right now, my GPS is saying that I'm not even going to be out of the state of California till 8 p.m. And it just keeps going up. I don't even know what's going on. Seems like at this point, it's going to be a humanitarian issue. There are people running out of gas and stuck in 100. It's 112 degrees. Yeah. I'm down to a little bit more than a quarter tank. This is fucked. Fucked up scenario. Hopefully I'm okay and everything works out and I can get out of the state of California at least today. I love you.
The only thing that made me feel slightly less worried is if there was anyone equipped to navigate going through the Mojave Desert, it would be Greg. Because Greg filmed a movie, him and his buddies, it's actually a great movie, it's called Roller, and they were in the Mojave Desert for a month or so?
Over the course of 2 years, we spent 28 days and nights in the Mojave Desert.
Yeah.
And traversed all throughout the Mojave Preserve, trying to find the best film locations, and I've been through almost every square inch of road that is available to drive on, including mining roads that have not been repaved, carved by a tractor or whatever in 30 years. So
that gave me like some sort of comfort. I'm like, if anyone's going to figure this out, it's Greg. So he's going to be fine. It's just going to be scary. I mean, again,
the only thing in question.
Yeah, more worried for other people that are just like starting to kind of panic. They don't know, like, there's people that have just only driven probably on that highway. They've never, you know, pulled off. They don't know what's out there. They probably don't even really know the outdoors all that well. And they're just panicking because they're uncomfortable. Like, right now we're recording because it's 85 degrees outside and we can't have the air on because it would be too loud. I'm panicking and I'm inside and I know that there's an end in sight, but I'm so hot right now, I'm not thinking clearly. I can't imagine.
Yeah, heat makes you do crazy things. Hunger makes you do crazy things. And that's really the only thing I was worried about were the other people. You know, being stranded somewhere is one thing, but being stranded with a bunch of people stuck in a contained environment that are slowly getting more and more paranoid and hungry and, you know, deteriorating into madness is what was worrying me. I was worried someone was going to pull into me, wreck into my car, or someone else was going to cause a bigger problem that would really get me stuck in the Mojave, which, as Rachel mentioned, I'm very equipped to navigate, and I was prepared. I knew right where I was at. Even though I didn't have GPS, I had taken these roads so many times, not only just driving back and forth from Colorado to California, but while filming Roller, like I was going into the Mojave Preserve and I almost always took I-40. Sometimes I went up to Baker off the I-15 and went in Kelbaker Road that way. But I knew where I was at and I knew that if I could make it to Ludlow, I would be fine and I would be able to navigate the roads off of basically memory to work myself around I-40 all the way to the border of California. But yeah, that's what's, you know, sometimes it's like maybe being stranded alone with, if you're prepared, is a better scenario than to be stranded with a bunch of people going crazy if you're prepared. Because I was worried. I mean, I had a case of water in the back of my truck. If we got really stuck, I was worried people were going to try to grab that. Like, I got out at one point and put that water inside my truck so I could keep it locked. You know, I was like starting to think this way. You know, people are panicking and things are definitely getting worse. And I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to make it to Ludlow, even though it was only 5 miles up on the road, because other accidents were happening. People were running out of gas and causing more bottlenecks because their car's just stuck on the road now.
Excuse me, were you not going to share some water with people if they were in dire straits?
I mean, that's the question.
Every man for themselves, I guess.
It's a question you got to ask yourself in these kind of scenarios. Like, I was contemplating at the time that we were potentially experiencing some sort of terror attack. And the news and the reporting just hadn't got to me yet. And that's why it was this jammed up. I mean, you got to understand that now we're looking at like 7, 8 p.m. I've been stranded on the road for 8 hours. And I hadn't gone more than 10 miles in 8 hours. And that's when I had finally made the survivalist plan. I switched off from casual lean back and listen to Incubus. They released a new version of Morning View. Great record. It got me through this. Thank you, Incubus. Hadn't listened to Incubus in like 10 years, and then boom. Anyhow, that was the soundtrack to this whole dilemma for me. So I had made the decision that if I can make it to Ludlow, I'm going to start to take matters in my own hand and not get back on I-40. And essentially just drive straight through the Mojave Preserve on roads that are not paved to work my way around this mess. And eventually, I did make it up to Ludlow. And of course, this is where things start to get wild. Ludlow's one of the only fuel stops in between the 200-mile stretch of gridlock. And people were running out of gas, and they're just hoping to get to the gas station. And of course, when you get there, it is a apocalyptic situation. It felt like a scene from a movie. There is a 12-year-old kid holding a piece of paper just written on it, out of all gas, you know, at the corner. And, you know, people are panicking. I'm worried about getting boxed in because there's so many people pouring out of this exit with nowhere to go, and you can't go into the gas station because people are already parked at the pumps waiting for gas to potentially maybe get there. And this town is inundated with more people than it's seen since 1849, when it even made the town because of the California gold rush. I mean, this is like not even a two-lane town. I mean, there's just the gas station and a hotel and a restaurant. And I think they're probably all owned and ran by the same family. Maybe not. I don't know. But it's the middle of nowhere. And it's the only gas station for miles. And it's completely out of gas. And now I'm a little worried because I'm down to a quarter tank. Even though I filled up before I got into this, I'm down to a quarter tank just from sitting there for 8+ hours with the AC blasting and the car running. And I know there's got to be more people in the scenario. And the gas station is ransacked. There's no snacks left. They've closed the public bathrooms. They've got porta potties outside. There's a line of 100 people waiting on the porta potty. There's an ambulance that it's made its way up from San Bernardino somehow to pick up people who are having heat stroke. I see multiple older women get put on stretchers and put into the ambulance. And I'm just like, man, like this is happening. This is essentially what feels like a dry run of a mass exodus due to a catastrophic situation in California, and a bunch of people are trying to leave all at once. This is kind of how it would play out. And I'm realizing, like, man, you know, there's almost no way to do it in a car. If you have a motorcycle, maybe you can make it out, but otherwise you need a plane or the know-how to navigate the Mojave Preserve. So it is at this point I'm ready to implement my plan. I'm either a sitting duck and I'm gonna park and sleep in Ludlow, California for the next few days until this whole thing shakes out, or I'm gonna go for it through the Mojave Desert on roads that maybe haven't seen a car in months or weeks. And I don't know how the weather's been. Some of these roads could have been washed out. I could run out of gas in the middle of the Mojave, but by God, I'd spent too much time in California already, and I was ready to get the hell out and back to my ranch. But I don't got a map, so I got to do this off of memory. And I tried. I called Rachel, and I asked her to send me screenshots of the map of the Mojave, thinking maybe that'll be able to come through because I can still make calls, and to go look at my dad's atlas. Praise my old man. He always carries an atlas in his car, and from this point forward, I will too. Note to self and note to all of our listeners, buy yourself an atlas, put it in your car with those water bottles and Clif Bars, and just it'll be there when you need it, because when you need GPS, it won't work. That's a guarantee. And so, of course, the photos that I had Rachel send me of my dad's atlas didn't come through either. But I know where Kelbaker Road is, and by God, I'm going to make it there. And I do. And so I turn off from civilization and the last paved roads I saw for over 2 hours and head into the Mojave Preserve on Kelbaker Road. And I know that it would benefit me just to be able to calculate the mileage to have a map. So I drive myself to the visitor center where I know there's a map on the wall. And about 10 cars followed me into the Mojave Preserve. It's a long train of cars. We all stop there at the visitor center, and people are huddled around the map, taking photos of it on their phone, and I do the same. But I know where I'm going. I've been here before. I know which roads to take, and I know that half of these cars that are with me can't make it. They're going to get stuck in the sand. They don't have four-wheel drive. They don't have the clearance. And I got a 40-foot transit bus stuck in the Mojave Desert. I've been out there. I've been stuck. I know what to expect. So I slowly just slink away from the crowd. I don't want to be the leader on this mission. This is a solo mission for me. And I head in to the deep, dark depths of the Mojave Desert in the middle of the night. And I'm headed for a little town, if you even want to call it a town, an unincorporated town called Sima. And I'm looking for a little dirt road called Black Canyon that is not marked by any signs. And, you know, I just kind of have to guess off the little map I've got from the visitor center when it's going to come up, kind of, you know, judging, did I just make kind of a little bit of a right-hand turn? It looks like it's coming up, so I'm driving slow, I'm thinking, and boom, I see a little dirt road that goes off into the abyss. And I just assume this is Black Canyon, and I gotta take it. And this is like a truck trail, as the map calls it, a Jeep 4x4, four-wheel drive. Like, there's not even gravel on it. They just had a tractor plow through the road like a bulldozer drove through, you know, some point last year. And it goes like up a mountain and down a mountain into a gully that washes out. And there are signs that say, and I quote, if there is water, turn around, you will drown. Which is kind of an intimidating sign to see. I mean, it's like a yellow metal.
That's terrifying.
Yeah, out of nowhere. You know, there's not even a street sign marking this road, but yet there's this sign that's like, if there's water, turn around, you're going to die. And I believe it. Like, dude, that flash floods, they happen in the Mojave. And it's kind of like, I'm going down at such a steep degree. And the road is so skinny, like there's no way to turn around. There's embankments of sand on either side of me from where the bulldozer pushed out the dirt. And it's too steep for me to reverse. And I can't really see around the corner if there's going to be water. So I'm just like holding my breath, going for it, hoping that I can make it through. Boom, that first one I get through. There was some soft sand, had to fly through it. But bam, I made it through. And finally, I get on to Essex Road, which I'd been on before. It's still, again, not a road, just a washboarded out sand path. And I'm flying, feeling good, feeling lean, feeling mean. Got the windows down, enjoying the hot 80 degree Mojave air, blasting that Incubus Morning View remake record. And then bam, I'm scared shitless. I have anxiety, pumping, shocking, like needles in my veins, because I see what seems to be like a monster on the side of the road.
Yucca Man.
Could be Yucca Man.
I looked it up. It's the Mojave Desert's Bigfoot.
Well, what I saw was, without a shadow of a doubt, a bull.
Oh.
With horns.
Ooh, eerie. Like that's eerie to see randomly big bull. In the middle of the night. Ooh.
But it was sitting down on the side of the road with a calf. And the way that it initially looked with the calf and the way the calf was positioned, it looked like a centaur, like sitting down, you know, like this. But with like a, so it kind of looked like a man with a bull's head. And I'm just like so fucked from the, you know, whole traffic debacle and dilemma and the nature of my journey at this moment that I'm like, this feels supernatural. It feels surreal. I feel like I am in a modern myth and there's something happening and that this is like actually a mythological creature, you know, and I fly right past it, but it's also like, I'm in the middle of nowhere. And I'm
like, who's cattle ranching there?
Whose cattle is that? Yeah, exactly.
They're not fenced in. Is that a wild?
Now, there are cattle guards, like, you know, around the Mojave getting in and out. Like, I know that they move cattle through there. But this just seemed, I mean, there was no other livestock. In the size of this bull, too. I mean, it seemed 2 times larger than any bull I'd ever seen. And I've seen some bulls because literally my neighbors have longhorn steer. Just, you know, I see them every day. And it was like 2 times. I mean, this was a massive animal in the middle of nowhere. Just like seemingly waiting for me. Something about it was also calming in a weird sense, like because the thing was just so stoic. But I don't know. I felt like I was on a highway from hell. And that was the devil himself being like, huh. You made it through.
Yeah, there we go.
It kind of felt like the final boss. Exactly. Once I made it past that bowl and like all of the stinging feeling cleared my bloodlines, and I'm like, okay, that was not actually a monster that's going to come after me. Well, thank
God it didn't like jump out and you got in a wreck.
Boom, I could have hit the damn thing.
See?
This road isn't big.
It was spiritual.
The road, I mean, I'd say a bulldozer's bucket's 10 feet wide. I don't know. Correct me if I'm wrong. Get on me, cat or caterpillar. Like, this is not a big road. Anyhow, I make it past the bull, and I'm at the top of a mountain in the Mojave, and I can see the traffic for miles. And I'm at this point, I've had no communication, and I'm in a zone where there is no communication. I can't call Rachel or my dad and see, like, is there something on the news? Like, I'm just like, man, this just seems wild. Because I can see probably for 100 miles from where I'm at this point. And it wasn't moving, and it was just wild to see from that distance.
So you did make it like a bat out of hell.
Very much so, very much so. So I am in the middle of the Mojave, alone, miles from the traffic jam, peering out at it. And finally, for the first time in 12 hours, at peace. I know where I'm at. I've been on Essex Roads 100 times. I know where it's going to spit me out at. I know I'm going to make it to Needles. I know I've got enough gas, and I passed the final boss, the centaur bull of the Mojave. Maybe that is the Yucca Man. And I decide to call it in for the night. It's about 2 a.m., and I give in, and I let California have me for one more night in my favorite place in the state, the Mojave Desert. And I sleep in the back of my truck bed, wake up at 5 a.m. just a few hours later. Traffic is still just piled up, hadn't made any progress, but I make it out, make it through the traffic jam. Apparently this entire bottleneck was caused from a half of mile of construction where the westbound lane entered the eastbound lane. That seems impossible for me to believe. The conspiracy I mentioned earlier... In the middle of the night, I filmed multiple semis buddying up, you know, pairing up in each lane, not letting anybody pass, and just stopping.
They were on their CB radio.
They were definitely CB in it. I wish I had your dad's logging truck instead of our new truck, so I had the CB radio in it. But I saw this happen repeated times, and I filmed it. The trucks would just stop, and maybe they were trying to break up the gridlock. But I don't know. I'm a little
Maybe they were being responsible.
Maybe they're being responsible. Maybe
we should post that footage on our Instagram.
It's a coup. Maybe it's an inside job with the semi community, and they plan this just to keep me in California for one more day. But either way, made it out alive.
I'm happy you did, and I love you.
Made it back to Colorado. I love you. That was a hell of a dilemma. One day trip turned into two, but I survived.
You did.
Learned a couple things that I'll keep with me for life. And for anybody in the Los Angeles basin who's worried about catastrophic events to where you have to flee the state, either get your pilot's license and learn how to hotwire a four-seater Cessna or buy a motorcycle.
And that's the lesson today, folks.
Yep, and get yourself an Atlas.
Well, thank you so much for telling your story, and thank you guys so much for listening. This was that. I mean, that's a wild story. I mean, you're the only person, well, out of like anyone I know, I guess. Plenty of people obviously survived that whole ordeal, but like, I don't know. I'd like to think I'm pretty scrappy, but I don't. Again, I'm already frustrated right now because it's too hot. I got a little bit of a stomach growl. I'm hungry. I also have never really driven in that kind of conditions in Mojave. You know, like, I wouldn't know. I probably would end up lost. I'd probably get confused. And,
yeah,
you know,
I mean,
like, I'm so happy you were okay. And I hope that everyone else fared just as well. While uncomfortable, but they left with a story. And again, guys, please send us your listener stories. We love hearing them. Hopefully you enjoyed this episode. I think Greg did a great job telling his story. And we love you so much. And thank you for listening. If you're enjoying the show, please leave a 5-star rating and positive review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. And we'll see you next week. We've got some cool episodes planned.
Love it. Thank you. Traffic jams are an interesting study in human nature. And, you know, now's your chance to prepare for your next one. So put a couple things in your car. Water, maps, granola bars, and, you know, Godspeed.